Good morning, everyone. Hello. How was your first session this morning? Everything go well? Learned some great things? We had a great session in here earlier, so we're all very energized. Thank you very much for joining us today for Write Without the Fight, Free Your Writing from Doubt and Delay, with Julia Roberts. My name is Michelle Tedford. I'm a staff member here at the University of Dayton at the Alumni Magazine, and I'm a longtime attendee, so I'm really excited to be here again for this event that I just love so much. We are recording this event, and during our conversation with Julia, she's going to be asking for input from the audience. I'm going to do my best to run around with a mic. If you could just hold your thought for a second after you raise your hand, and I'll get it to you. And that way, those folks who didn't have the opportunity to join us can still hear the entire discussion on the recorded version of today's event. So Julia Roberts has a master in creativity, and she brings a scientific approach to the creative process. She is also a certified creativity coach. She believes that we must first get to know our strengths and then acquire the tools and good habits that will help us write. Among her books is Sex, Lies, and Creativity, Gender Differences in Creative Thinking. Please help me give her a warm Irma welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. So I'm Julia, as she well said. And the thing about this Write Without the Fight is that I had more fight than write for, a solid 45 years. I can tell you, like, 45 years and 45 pounds is about how long you can outrun that. And so I'm a little like a proselytizer with this information because I went and got my master's in creativity, and it freaking changed my life. And you know, I write now. So that's why I really want to share this with all of you and hopefully amplify the voices that matter in the world, the voices in this room in particular. So I also will announce, because women always point out the one flaw in their presentation, right? There's a typo on page 68, you know. But other than that, I hope you enjoy. But as you can see, it changed my font, so everything's going to run off the page. So you'll just have to rely on me to, you know, tell you what it says. So the five things you need to know to write with less doubt and delay. Does anybody here suffer from doubt or delay as they try and write? Oh, good. Well, you're in the right place. Okay. So there's always vulnerability when you write, right? So that's not the kind of doubt and delay I'm talking about. We can't undo that. That's not actually what you want. You don't want to be like so cold hard steel that you don't even have vulnerability as you write. So that's not the fight I'm talking about. That's just part of your process. It's a different kind of fight. It's the fight that might keep you from writing at all. It's the fight that makes you doubt your ideas. And I don't know if anybody else saw Three Billboards of Ebbing, Missouri. As soon as I left that thing going, I can't write. Damn. Because it was just so strong and characters and everything. It keeps you from finishing your work. You get it halfway in there and you just think, either you just get lost in the weeds, or you don't think it's any good, or you know. It also keeps you from promoting or selling your writing when you get done. You don't have the confidence, you don't have the will to figure out what it'll take. All of those things are the fights that keep you from getting your voice in the world. So it's that kind of fight. Just, I think you've had enough of who I am. But housekeeping, we have about an hour and 15 minutes. Is that correct? Yeah. And we're going to talk about this, less resistance, more presence, less inner dialogue, less doubt and delay. Okay? And we have points where I'll have a discussion, and you know, and at that point, at any point, if you have a question, you're welcome to ask. So we have conflict and turmoil at certain points in the process. And the thing that is revolutionary here is that we each have our own point in the process when we face that turmoil. And so that's partly why we judge each other or judge ourselves, because others don't have that same timing, or like they do that so easily. And we always want to do what we do easily plus whatever they do easily. You know, that's what we want. We don't want what they do poorly plus what we do poorly, which is what we always get. But at any rate, so we're going to look at what in you helps makes you resist writing. And I call that the creative selfie, because I offer a creative selfie, which is three different creativity assessments that help you get sort of a 360-degree view of yourself. And today we're going to do sort of a light version of that that'll help you really pinpoint what in you helps you, what makes you resist writing, and then you'll know which of the tools I present here are for you. Okay? Does that sound good or useful? Good. Okay. So as soon as you learn five things about yourself, you can transform your creativity, you can enhance your productivity and find flow more often, you can make creative process more reliable, less dread, get out of your head. Okay. A lot of us put up, or some of you might already be putting up roadblocks here because you're like, whoa, you know, scientific approach to creativity, it's supposed to be magic, you know, or you can't teach creativity. We've always been told, because it's such a gatekeeper community, that, that you know, you probably just aren't talented enough if you need this help. You know, we tell ourselves that, we tell other people that, because it is publishers, editors, we all have to get through that gate. So, you know, or in this case, you know, writing's supposed to be hard and that you can't force flow. It's this magic thing. Those things are only true to a degree. There's a whole lot that can help you get a lot closer. Okay. Did I skip it? Oh. So if you learn nothing else today, these are the two big buckets of how science separates creativity. Divergent thinking and convergent thinking. So if those graphics help, but divergent is just everything in the whole wide world. That's just like your mind goes everywhere and pulls out ideas. Convergent thinking is bringing it all in, selecting and perfecting. So if you're a divergent thinker, you're this kind of person. Lots of ideas, lots of questions. You're comfortable with ambiguity and mess. You like possibility, flexibility. You have a real fluid way of thinking. You're open and you're curious. This is a divergent thinker. A convergent thinker, equally creative, but a different kind of creative. Decisive, select and perfect. Find the essential. Streamline, develop, narrow the focus. Yeah?
Can you be both?
Well, everybody is both. But there might be one that you excel in. But you can't create without doing both. It's just like almost like inhale, exhale. But one of the main points is to separate those thinkings. Don't try and edit as you write would be the distillation of that. Editing is really convergence. Writing is really divergence. So just separating those two will enhance your creativity enormously. Just that. You could all go home. You know? Was that a question? I'm sorry, did I miss that? Okay. So, like, this is sculpture, poetry. It's all, reducing things to get the best. So, which do you think you are? How many of you think you're divergers, mostly? A good half. How many of you think you're primarily convergers? That's your strength. Yeah. I think in your session, Sharon, you told us that once you've written 100 pages, it's really going to be 30. So that's like she really focuses on the converging as where she thinks the magic happens, you know? So it's really that. It's really that where you think you are special, you know? Okay. So if everybody would just like cross your arms like this, just go ahead and cross your arms over your... So that's kind of hard or kind of easy, I mean, right? But if you try and do it the other way with the other arm on top... Just do that. It's a little unnatural. So that's what answers that question. We can do both. Duh. I mean, is there anybody who can't do it? Is anybody like still working on getting it right? But one feels really natural and the other takes a little effort. Takes a little, yeah. So that kind of answers that. Can you be both? Everybody's both. But we always sort of have one that drives us. So, okay. Just by way of like who the heck I am, I always knew I would write. I kept a journal when I was very young. It didn't look like that because I come from six kids, so it was probably just a composition notebook. We never got anything special. And I spent about 20 years as a brainstormer in corporate settings, so I would just be called in to come up with hundreds of ideas for whatever, a new Pepsi promotion or something along those lines. I worked for pretty much any brand you can think of. Because that's all I did. I stayed in the conference room and ate pizza and M&Ms and came up with ideas. Because guess what? I'm a divergent thinker. And then 9/11 happened. And, you know, it took me years to actually own this as a loss because there were such horrible losses on that day. Particularly, I'm from New York, and people lost their spouses and things. And I lost my career. So I felt very self-conscious about it. But the fact of the matter is that all blew up because everybody's budgets dried up. And, I stopped getting the calls to come in and brainstorm. So I had a big panic in my life because I was this one-trick pony. I had so specialized in divergent thinking. And then I got, you know, my little girl of 1,000 years ago came back. And I thought, you know, you have this little thought of, what if I'm not a writer at all? That's a really painful thought. Because, you know, I coach writers all the time. And, you know, they'd complain and whatever. And I say, okay, then, you know, just quit writing. And they'd crack up. Of course, if we could quit writing, that's what we would do. So I was really afraid that maybe I wasn't going to be a writer, wasn't going to be able to be a writer. And I don't know why it was so, you know, important, but it's a driving force. It's a compulsion in our lives. So that was why I started on this path of getting my coaching and then creativity coaching and then my master's. And what I found out about myself, which is what puts me on the stage and makes sure that I talk to a lot of writers every year, is I found out I don't clarify. That was my real downfall in the creative process. And we'll go through the process in just a minute. I don't clarify, so here's what happened to me. I had a great idea. I got started right away. Something went a little wrong. And, oh, well, I'll have a new idea, right? Don't worry about those 7 months. So I get a new idea. I get started right away. Something went a little wrong, and I had to get a new idea. And so I enjoyed my life. I love ideas. I love every one of my ideas. But, you know, I was this. It wasn't until I took assessments and learned that I don't clarify that I had at least the option of this, you know? So it was enormous for me. So that's really, like I said, that's why I speak to writers all the time, because this has changed my life. So, as I said, I got my coaching certificate with Martha Beck. That kind of helped me get peace, like, between the ears, you know? Then I got creativity coaching with Eric Maisel. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's got 22-ish books on the creative process and the artist within, and he's a great writer. That kind of gave me purpose. And then I got my master's, and that really gave me powerful tools. Water. No explanation necessary. That's where you'll find me, decodingcreativity.com. Okay, so here we go. 5 things you need to know. How to see it. I was really blind to clarify. And in fact, our egos work extremely hard to keep us blind to our weaknesses. So sometimes you even hear it, learn it, and then, of course, you just forget it immediately because your ego's just like, erase. You know? What to name it. Learn to claim it, how to tame it, and then how to live with it. So we're going to go through those one by one. Oh, sure. I guess. Is it okay with?
Can you back up one slide?
I'll take
it. I just can't see.
You have that in the handout too, though. Yeah. Yeah, I don't dare touch the microphones, please. Look at your handouts before you scribble everything, because you really have a lot in there, so that you wouldn't have to scribble. Okay. And you can take a picture. Okay. See it is the thing one. Here's what I hear all the time. I procrastinate. That's like self-blaming, right? Or I have no time. That's self-excusing, right? So you want to see what actually causes those situations. This may be true or not true, but there's something behind it as well. So let's just start by, so what I intend to do here is kind of do a little mini assessment with you so that you get a good sense of where in the process your struggle might be. So if you had to think of the last time you sat down to write something, Where did you get lost? Where did you get stopped? Or where did you just give up? Was it you couldn't get started? You started and stopped? You never think it's good enough? Or you rush through it, afraid to take your time? Like, so literally I want you to try and pick the one that you remember having that, and then just write down that numbers as we go through. Does everybody sort of have a sense of, I'll give you another minute, like if you just visualize where you were or what. Okay. This is why you have to, we talked about quitting writing, right? But if you are a writer and you are not writing, you have frustration, anger, resentment towards others sometimes, sinking self-esteem, and then the classic, overthinking, overdrinking, and overeating. I've never done any of those things. Okay. This is why I think writers are really important. We have the weird ideas that are going to like change the world. This degree that I have, I graduated 20 people. They graduated about 20 people a year. 19 out of 20 go into business and help somebody come up with a new line extension for, you know, a soap product or a can of, you know, a Diet Coke or something. And we're the people who are going to come up with the weirdo thoughts and change the way people see things or think of things. And that's why I really care that we not rob the world of our voices, of our visions, of what people are afraid of hearing or think is weird or all those things. So are we good with being weirdos? We're all right with that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What, you've never seen a cat on a pizza in space? Is that what you're telling me? I do too, because I moved to California and the pizza is terrible. New York pizza. Okay. So again, we have these roadblocks. Some of you might be secretly thinking some of these things. If anybody's thinking something other than this about this, like you have a little negative thought about any of this, I'll just share it. I would like to hear. But things like it'll happen when it was meant to happen, like we have a fatalness, what is that called? Fatalism. Or I have to do all my money-making tasks first, like that writing's just less important than everything else in your life. And I just don't have time. I really, really, really don't have time. You don't understand. Unless you gave birth like a few weeks ago and you're selling your house, you have time to write. You know, unless you're like really answering, just a sec, unless you're really answering like the most basic needs in the hierarchy, you can write. You had a question.
I think also fear of failure, like if I don't actually write it, then mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know.
Can everybody hear her? She's saying fear of failure is keeping her from writing. I call that like the hope balloon. Like the hope is so much better than the reality that I hate to pop it and make it into whatever I can actually get on paper. Yeah. I love the hope balloon. Okay. So this is just this moment in time when you can, you know, think about where you think you are. What was the number 1, 2, 3, or 4? Do you think you picked accurately? What's stopping you when you really try and write? And I don't mean write for your clients or write. I mean your work. But you guys know that. You know what I'm, because you're here for your own work. So this is those same four, more or less. And how many of you think you're basically quit before you get started? Think prevent yourself from writing. Okay, about a quarter. How many of you think you quit to jump to a new idea? Yeah, see, I raised my hand for everyone. How many of you think you got lost in the weeds? So that's a little more than a quarter. That one's a little heavy. How many of you think you wrote the whole thing and then you just didn't sell it? You just didn't implement it at the end? Mm-hmm. So it actually was a pretty even divide, except we had kind of a lot in number 3, got lost in the weeds. Okay. So this is why I think assessment and this kind of work is really important. You can't see the ingredients from inside the jar. There's just no two ways about it. We all, like, we have no perspective on ourselves. Okay. This is a client of mine. She had a lot of therapy. She's an artist. And she was like, this little assessment, you know, she said, I found out I had blinders. I put up my own little fences. I was holding myself back. But, you know, so I just, she's just telling that story. Okay. So we're going to move on to name it. Everybody has sort of their see it. They've all seen it. Okay. I don't know why I do what I do. You know, it's just a frustrating reality. I don't know why I do what I do. So we have this darling little girl on the potty there. And for a good reason. It's not just salacious. She is about 2.5 or 3. And that's when children learn to use the toilet. Do we know why? It's because that's when they get language. And before you have language, the sensations in your body or from the world, like what you see and what you hear, can't cross from the right brain to the left brain and become logic and say, oh, those sensations mean go to the bathroom. And, oh, I can do that, you know. So until you get language, you really can't be potty trained. And there are stories in the 1950s of women training their children at ages 1 and things like that, but mostly those women were trained. And the children just did what they did. So you need language. And without language, there is no strategy, which is why naming it right now is extremely important. Okay, so feels like we've been through these. Anyway, some people, this one's a real woman one, selfish and self-absorbed, to spend time on your own creativity. And some of you go, oh, I don't have that, and then you'll think of instances in your life where you give up what you want or need for any old reason, you know. Okay, so there was about 30 years of science looking into what enhances creativity. It's not a new thing. It's not like the happiness science, which really has only been around about 10 years. It started in the 1950s. There's 30 years of academic science, but it started in the 1950s with the CIA wanting to get what they call a CQ, because they had the brand new IQ where they could test intelligence, and they had physical tests they could do. And if they wanted spies, they needed what they thought of as a CQ, the creativity quotient. So all this research, all this money went into research for creativity. So it's a really well-established science, and this is basically the creative process as observed when it's working. So your brain goes from clarifying to ideating to developing, to implementing. And that's micro and macro. That'll be naming a chapter and writing your whole book and changing a sentence. And, you know, so it's micro and macro. It's just what your brain does. So when you have a spot in this cycle that you either dread or don't do well or diss, I dissed clarifying. You know, I thought it was boring. You're basically shortchanging a part of the process and stopping yourself. That's a lot of the fight is right there.
What's
clarified before ideating? So what are you trying to achieve in the essay? Who is your audience? How might I evoke this kind of emotion? How might I address this problem? It's the more general. You could write that essay 1,000 ways, but until you're like clarifying what you're trying to achieve, your ideas won't fall in place in a really solid and persuasive way. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm just thinking
about that. It's just what our brains do. I'm not saying you from now on do it this way, please. I'm saying this is what's observed by, you know, in the beginning, they literally put like 10 practitioners on each creative person on a ranch and followed them around and took notes on what they did. And that was the original creativity research. So this is just actually what you do. Do you have to? Obviously, I skipped clarify for a long, long time. And what happens is you don't actually have very effective creativity. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking that I might be clarifying as I.
Which means you'll do both not as well.
That's
yeah.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. It just does. It just means that you're not doing either of them as well as you have the capacity to do. All right. So each of these phases is defined by what you actually do in that phase. So these are, you know, got a little big, but one is solve the right problem, which is like the goal setting, like I said. What are we trying to achieve? What are we trying to solve? Ideate, number two, is come up with the ideas. Most of us are pretty solid ideators. Three is the develop phase, which a lot of you put down three. And that's where you, I can't read what I actually have there, select and perfect concepts. And then number four is where you put the plan into action. Depending on where you like to live, you also will get stuck there because, I mean, I love ideas. Just stick me there, you know. I'm good with that. A couple chocolate chip cookies and I'll just wait out my life. So depending on what you really love, you can get stuck there. But also, depending on what you hate, you can try and skip it. And what will happen is you'll end up not really having success. You'll have pieces of success. Okay. Each mind's also defined by actually how your brain thinks in that phase. So your brain acts differently in each of these phases, which is why some of us are good at some parts of it and some of us are good at other parts of it, because we have different brains. So clarifiers want to solve the right problem. Ideators want to get the big idea. Developers want to get it perfect, and implementers want to get it done. These are sort of almost personality traits, you know? Like, what is it drives you? And as you're listening to these things, try and figure out where you think you are. Yes?
So where would drafting an initial draft fall? Is that...
It's going to... So again, it's micro and macro, so it doesn't sit in one little square, usually, but you're going to have a lot of ideas, you're going to do the developing, write it all the way out, you know, and then you're going to... So it's macro and micro. The whole book could fit in this, and then developing, writing would be pretty much in this phase. But it's also micro, so your writing that would be all those things, any given chapter, any given paragraph, any given... Does that make sense? Everybody cool on that? Okay. And lastly... that was lastly. Okay. So anyway, let's try and name your creative strength here then. Where do you think you fit as your primary driver, as who you think you are creatively? And there's no right or wrong answer. I will say, I found out in my classes that here in the U.S., or here on the Western Hemisphere, we think of ideas and the front end of innovation, ideas and clarifying, as creativity. When we say someone's creative, that's what we mean. But on the Eastern Hemisphere, China and Japan, they mean the back end of innovation, the selecting and perfecting and the implementing. So that's when they say the word creative, that's what they mean. It's just what they've glorified versus what we've glorified, right? Because they have like rice gardening and bonsai gardening, and it's all incremental and perfecting, and that's what they think of as. So someone like me would be like, drunken ideas, or too bad she can't make anything of it. You know, like if she were creative, all those ideas would turn into something. So it's the exact opposite. So there's no one thing that is creative. The whole cycle is absolutely creative. There is no wrong way to be creative. So does everybody sort of have this, or do you want to take another minute to think about where you live? Yeah. Any questions about, or anybody want to tell me where they think they live? Ideas for you?
Mm-hmm. Ideas. I can come up with jillions, and I love ideas. It's, however, perfecting and implementing.
That slow you down?
That slowed me down, yeah. Because mm-hmm. I go, wow, there's a better idea.
Right? Well, yeah, that's what happened to me for 42 years, 45 pounds. I'm just going to say it again.
Anyone else want to share?
Over here, behind you.
Do you think any of this has to do with ADHD, where you have these ideas, but you can't round them into, you know, finishing it? You start, but you never finish it. Like...
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I've had that kind of question. If an ideator is by nature potentially more likely to have ADHD as well. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I'm bringing it up, if that would be true, then you need to also focus on how to improve your ADHD. You know, so, what skills can you
That's not really my, that's out of my bounds.
Uh-huh.
But for instance, I lost my thought. Oh, in general, just from a psychological point of view, writers are 8 times more likely to be depressive than the general population. So, but do we want to have to solve depression here? You know, mm-hmm. we can't. Mm-hmm. But it is true. That is, you know, that's observable. And it's feasible. I haven't read any studies on that, but it's quite feasible that ADHD and ideator might have a correlation.
Yeah, just when she's mm-hmm. saying that, like, can't finish. I have all these great ideas, but I never implement them. Or
but, it, I mean, the, never, this but. Might be an easier way to look at it. Uh-huh. Just get a tool for the developer, yes, and we'll yes. get to them. Okay. Yeah. This might just be a simpler way to look at it, a little less, I was going
to
say math, but...
We have to work with the brain we have, so...
Yeah, we have to love the brain we have, right? We have to not apologize for the brain we have. Go ahead.
Hi. So when you're talking about solving the right problem, are you talking about what you want your audience, what you want your readers to get from the from what you're writing?
So, I mean, these are general terms. I mean, I'm bringing them to writers, but... clarify is that phase where you're really pointing your work towards where it should go or what you... So that's what solving the right problem really means, making sure that you are writing for a reason or writing with an audience or writing with a point. All those things come out of the clarifying phase. Is that...
Yes.
Does that help? Okay. Any other points or questions? Yes? Oh, in the front here.
A thought occurred that maybe a mission statement might be a really good starting point.
That's a one good way to clarify. And I'm actually, we do have tools. We're going to, are we running out of time a little bit? Let me move. Okay. You already told me. So if in the assessment, you'll actually see not just your primary, which I think we're going to be able to identify, but how all four of those things correlate in your own self. So one is a cup, not just a cup. So as soon as I found out I was an anti-clarifier, and I was an anti-clarifier, when people in the room wanted to clarify, I would like sort of stomp my foot because it was a little threatening. Why don't we get on to where I can shine, the ideation part? And it was a little boring. How long do we have to do this? I've got ideas. You know. So as soon as I found out that that's what I don't do well, my husband's a clarifier, my mom's a clarifier. You sort of find what you need, I guess, in the world. And my mom, I like the day after class, I said, oh, can I have a cup? And she goes, oh, do you want a short cup or a tall cup? I have this warm cup, or are you going to have a drink? And I'm just like, oh, my God, do you have a gun? You know? So the very help I needed, I obstructed. So that's a real, and is even knowing what you need, you're likely to lose sight of it very quickly because your brain works hard to keep you from knowing your weaknesses. So, okay. Literary agent who did this with me, and she felt it was really diagnostic from the point of view of just interacting with her team and understanding what she needed to not obstruct, look for in other people. Okay. So everybody has their name? We're going to claim it. Does this ever happen to anybody? I feel like a total fraud sometimes. Uh-huh. We don't claim what we have. We just live in the fear of what we don't have. Sucks to be us, right? We want to claim what we have. And that's why I have this beautiful picture of Victoria. I don't know if anybody's been watching Victoria on PBS. But she came to the throne at the age of 18. Everybody would have liked to have taken her regency away from her, right? She had to affect it and claim it. So, so that's what we're going to do here. People really question this information because it's not taught in the MFA programs, or they think if you're not able to write, you're probably not a writer. You know, if you're able, you know, like especially people who are published and things, they just think, well, if you're, you know, if you're meant to do it, you're going to be able to do it. I happen to know that you can do it enormously better with a little self-information. Okay. Also, once you really know your value, I used to probably undercharge for brainstorming because I thought it was so easy for me. I thought everybody could do that, you know? And you can find your comfort zones and get that job. All you do is ideas. Or you can also find your way out of it because you're in a rut. Okay. Also, you can use your strengths better. So my strength is ideation, as I've said how many times? Am I counting? But... and I don't like clarification and everything. I got to a point where, like, even, like, losing weight, if I look at what they say to do, it's like so prescriptive and so, you know, it bores me. I'm immediately like, so if I wanted to lose weight, I should look at not the way they say to do it, but in some way that's going to engage my strength. So just ideating ways to make it a creative event for me or a funny event for me or something like that. So it also helps you just use your strengths in unique ways facing any problem. Okay. This is, I should be able to do this. This should be done by now. And it's so painful to have that thought. You really have to allow yourself to just dismiss that thought. I am where I am where I am, and I have the best brain I can have. Okay. I think Mary Miller comes here, doesn't she? I think I've met her here 2 years ago. Anyway, okay, tame it. No one else seems to have this problem. We always compare our like insides to other people's outsides. You know, like they present as this wonderful person, and we know we sometimes look like that, but behind the scenes we're this boiling mess of emotion. So we always think we're the only one with that problem. So yeah. Yep.
And I mean, I started reading all the Facebook things in preparation for coming in. Stop. I mean, because that derails me instantly.
Uh huh.
In so many aspects of life, including my writing. But I mean, we're all curing.
Mm-hmm. I was like running through my head the other day things you wouldn't post on Facebook. You know, like I was thinking, I'm not going to hit my kid today. Go me. I was just like, and do I have the courage to post that? No, I don't. Even with the hashtag, like things you wouldn't put on Facebook, I still wouldn't have it, you know? Okay, so the other thing I'm going to point out here is that the tools we're about to go through, and they're as I've said, powerful, are not like my ideas. These are been in the workforce 30 years, 20 years. They've been used on thousands and thousands of people. The science is open source. If you have access to you know, a scientific base, you're allowed to get these articles yourselves. So, and I say that because nobody's developing them in a corner and keeping the information to themselves. It's all open source scientific literature that these tools come from. So you can have confidence in them, even though they might seem extremely simple. Okay. Does anybody else get on the couch and eat ice cream and watch TV, or is that just me? Okay. So your voice might be trapped by a weakness in one part of the process. So we're going to try and get you bridged from strength to strength. I can't skip clarify. I tried that decades, but I can get better at it. So this is a tool for clarifying, and it's called Mighty Language, or I call it that. I've renamed everything because they'll have business names. And we don't respond to that language. We just go, oh, that's not for me. So Mighty Language is just using the word might. As soon as your brain hears the word might, you have a little survival instinct pop up. And you think, oh, might be food, might be a predator, might be a sexual opportunity. You have a survival instinct response to the word might. You're powerless over it. So using any of these phrases, how to, how might I, what might be all the ways, or in what ways might I, or if you're working in a group, in what ways might we, how might we, instead of being stuck in a problem, you're already solving it. Your brain's already working on it, against your will almost. So I'm sure all of us have had this sentence in our head. Just say that sentence in your head. Either one of them that makes sense to you. Or, you know, just say it in your head and think about where you're thinking, like where in your brain it appears. And then say this new sentence. How might I write this chapter? Does that feel, can you actually feel that? It actually shifts from your lower brain, your reptilian brain, to your, sometimes it's called the story brain, your neocortex. Where you're thinking actually shifts. This is called upshifting and downshifting. When you have fear, you downshift. When you have opportunity or ideas, you upshift. So literally, did you feel it actually? Yeah. So might is a very strong tool. It sounds very simple, but just generating this habit of saying, how might I, instead of, I have to, will change a lot for you. Okay, so that's one tool. That's the only clarifying tool I brought. Now, and we all have heard of brainstorming, so I didn't want to bring that stupid tool. Not, it's a great tool, but that known tool, pardon me. this is called the third. When you're brainstorming, you write down a few ideas, right? And you think, things are terrible. And then you write down a few more, and you go, oh, I got something good going on here. And then you quit. But there's this ineffable third that is the most original thinking that you're going to get to as a group or as a person. So you push yourself then to that third, and it's about quantity at this point. And you get to what you probably think are stupid ideas. The cowboy in space, the cat on a slice of pizza. You know? But it is going to be your most original thinking. And the way you can harvest those ideas instead of judging them is to always use this sentence then. How might this idea work? You know, you see a cat on a piece of pizza flying through space, and you think, how might that idea work? And you can find a space, a place for it, you know? But this sentence will change how you look at, you know, what always ends up being like cowboys and robots in space and, you know, just, and then I'll kill her off, you know, like those ideas that you know are kind of dumb. But if you look at them this way, how might this idea work? You'll soften it, it'll work, and it'll be your most original thinking. Any questions or ideas on that? Okay. All right, so that is the ideate tool. It's in your handouts, too. Yes? Okay. You mean like, so you're working on a... It can be applied to any kind of ideation. So if you're trying to come up with what format you're going to do, or you're going to... So to repeat your question, if you guys couldn't hear it up front. Repeat your question. I'm not sure I heard it up front. Right. Okay. So she's saying literally, like, if you're in the edit phase or the reformatting phase, could that sentence empower you? How might this idea work? Yes, because what you're going to say, typically, the way the human brain works is, God, this isn't working. Right? And where are you then? Yeah, you've downshifted. And so if instead of that you use this sentence, how might this idea work, where are you now? You don't have an idea yet, but you're there. You're ready to have the idea. So absolutely, that little sentence works so... And let me also say it works really, really well when you're sharing ideas with people or people are sharing ideas with you. You know, we have our baby ideas that are really fragile and frail, and I wrote a pop song yesterday for the first time. God knows I haven't shown it to anybody, but a character of mine in a book is going to be singing a pop song, so it'll come up every once in a while. Don't ask to see it. But... But you know, like that literally was the idea. Was my first idea was, I can't write a pop song, for God's sakes. I don't even do poetry. I don't even have that converging mentality. But how might I? And I was like, oh, I'll Google how to write a pop song, and I was on my way. You know. So yeah, that's always an empowering sentence, and it's a very good way of sharing ideas. Like, so you tell me what you're working on. I'm not going to give you my opinion. I'm going to say, oh, how might that unfold? Or how might that work on, you know, in what you're doing? And it'll enormously change how well you collaborate, how well you support another writer. Okay. All good? Okay. Now we're in the development phase, which was quite a few of us here, more than a quarter. And the reason is because we're writers. We like to get down and dirty and in the real world of things and make it all work. But so in general, we probably have good development skills. But then there's the hyper, super, extra developer would be somebody like J.K. Rowling, who wants to do a 7-book or 8-book series. She really wants to make a whole world. We all want to make a world. And that's what developing really is. But some people just really have to live there in a much deeper and big way. But I actually like to use this tool more for putting your project together, like, and seeing yourself through the program. Not so much what I see myself writing, but what I see myself doing. And that phrase, again, these are tested concepts, but that phrase of what I see myself doing launches a vision in your head. And as we are writers, we have that creativity to imagine literally ourselves in that situation, and we can see a little physical world. So instead of having a to-do list, which does nothing for you except probably stress you out, or give you that little pleasure, check, check, check. If you put it in paragraph form, it really works in our brains really well, and it helps you visualize. So you start your paragraph with, what I see myself doing is writing each morning at 10 a.m. until I have to get the babysitter at 11:30, or what I see my, and the next subsequent paragraphs just start with, I see myself. But it just cues your brain over and over and over again to see it. And it helps you then not leave big blanks as to what how it'll work. Because we think in narratives, it's really easy for us to go, oh, I'm going to need that and add that to the story. Whereas to-do lists have big holes and we don't see them. So this is, a phrase that triggers your brain more powerfully to do what we're doing. And that's my development tool. And lastly, I needed to use this picture. Because it's so weird. anyway, and how might I use that picture? So Sisters and Resistors is a big implementation tool. And the idea is, if you're really revved up about your project, like I am right now, I'm in chapter 3 of the book I'm writing. So I like it right now. I might not like it another 100 pages, right? So when I'm sitting here, sitting pretty, I'm going to do this tool. God, mental note, do this tool to myself. But list 100 people you know, or 200 people that you know. And next to each one, just write down something small and specific that they might do for you. So that could be as little as read a chapter, go out for coffee, or as big as take my dog, let me use their lake house, connect me to an agent. But research shows that if you have a small and specific ask, you're like enormously more likely to get that help. And when we get in our lizard brains and hating the work we're doing, we can't think of these things. We think, no, he's going to help me, I'm terrible. So do it now while you're really enthusiastic about what you're working on and really hopeful about what you're working on. And then when you're low, you have something to look at that you go, okay, at one point I thought she'd go out for coffee with me. Right now I think nobody would go out for coffee with me, but I'll call her. You know, I'll make that. And it'll start getting you back on track. So I can be on your list. But not for coffee unless you're in L.A. You just friended me on Facebook. I'll remember to accept your friending. That is small and specific, baby. Yes?
Maybe because this is my problem area, but I'm a little confused. I mean, mm-hmm. When would you do this?
Okay, so you're starting a project, and you're feeling really good about it. Oh. Stop and think of at least 100 people who could help you with it in small and specific ways. Because you want to do it while your brain is really firing, all those synapses are happy. So, does that answer that, or does that not answer that?
Yeah, I guess it does.
Like right now, I didn't do it. I haven't done it yet on my book. I just now remembered to myself, oh, I need to do that while I'm...
But then do you actually have to call these people?
No, you got a list. You have 100 opportunities to get yourself out of the rut when you're in the rut. But you're creating it now. So this is your cheat sheet back in. Now, if you wait till you're in the dumps, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, guess I'll go and eat some dirt,
I thought it was warm, but maybe in the South they
won't. I think in my family we probably served worms. Dirt was the lower. Okay, so those are the four tools. tools, there's a lot of tools. I mean, there's hundreds of tools split into these four categories. And it just helps you get your brain up and running, so you have a lot less downtime. Becky Brown, are you here? No, not today. Maybe tomorrow. She's here at the conference, but she was just like, I told her a couple of years ago just to do one thing different when she was trying to do something she really dreaded. And she starts wearing what she calls her redonkulous rhinestone headband when she did this work. And like, it got her off the dime, and she started doing it just because she felt silly instead of down, you know? So if you have a redonkulous rhinestone headband, it might work for you, although it's not a tested scientific tool. Okay, so living it is really a matter of getting these habits. As I said, your ego is very quick to erase this information. And so, in fact, I want to right now ask everybody to sort of say what they think their power creativity, you know, your power phase is. So I'm just going to ask, what do you think your power phase is, Sharon?
I'm a little confused because I love planning and I love revising, but I'm not a fan of crafting.
Uh-huh. So you're mostly a developer, sounds like to me.
Okay.
Yeah. What, did you find your power, Julia?
Implement.
Implement? Oh, my God, you're everybody's best friend. Implement. Did you find yours? What's that?
Ideas.
Did you find yours? Developer. Did you find ideas? Did you find yours?
Develop.
Oh, and in the purple? Develop?
Mm-hmm. I think
mm-hmm. Did you find yours?
Verify.
Did you find yours? I'm going to go through the whole room, so everybody get ready. Because I want you to say it out loud and own it. Not just because, you know, I'm killing time. Go ahead, though.
Develop.
Okay.
Develop.
Yep. What do you think yours was? Ideas? Mm-hmm. And then, and then in the way back. So you were bad at implementing. Go ahead. That does actually exist. There are people who are called integrators, and they actually have equal strength and energy throughout. And I really didn't make this clear, that it isn't necessarily just your strength. It's actually when you bring energy, when you have positive energy versus when you have negative energy. So clearly I can clarify, especially now that I know how better, but it's still not my favorite thing. You know, like I lose energy when I get to that. But then there's somebody called an integrator who, when they test really evenly because they care more about the process in some ways than the individual activities. I mean, my little, so that's flat. Mine like goes clarify, ideate, develop, implement. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just going to rephrase that for you. Who am I to say? But I will say, if we would all quit saying, I have to, I have to, I have to, and say either how might I, and then you'd come up with the idea of writing on commercials, or I get to, it would change your approach and your availability mentally for writing. So I get to is really much stronger in terms of your approach, and you'll just do more writing. Okay, on the way back, let's finish with the
developer.
Great. Okay. I'm up to you, yeah.
I think I'm an implementer.
You think you're an implementer?
Definitely the idea, because I want to know how you get a job to be a brainstormer.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought that was
you know, I don't know. I just kind of found my way in there. I don't have it anymore. Go ahead in the purple. Oh, Jane. Mm-hmm. Clarify. A lot of scientists are clarifiers by nature. Yeah. In fact, in the whole world of things, Well, that's really more diverge, converge. Einstein is really this clarifier. Like, if he had an hour to save the universe, he'd use 55 minutes of it making sure he's solving the right problem, because then the answer would present itself. Whereas Edison is really an ideator. He just keeps coming up with new ideas. That's what he's not, it's not vision, it's increment. Go ahead, please. What do you think? Idea?
Ideas,
ideas, ideas, yeah?
Developer.
See, and even just asking a lot of questions is likely to be like a developer. Yeah. And I mean, it just displays, it just shows, it demonstrates what you're saying pretty much.
I don't know.
That's okay. I missed one person. What's that?
I think I might be clarifying. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure.
So in that way, we call that the front end of innovation. Is that going to go back to? No. Forget. The circle. We call that the front end of innovation. You clarify an idea, and the back end is develop and implement. And that's what I was saying, the hemisphere is viewed differently, Eastern versus Western hemisphere. Go ahead. Do you think you've got to your golden answer?
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just go quickly through the remainder here. Okay. Uh-huh. Ideas. Uh-huh. And then, do you guys know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Develop.
Okay.
Develop.
Ideas, right?
Ideas.
And what did you think? Okay. So there's one thing to know your strength, and that's a groovy thing. It's another to know your falling down point. And that's really like, what's the fight? That's the fight that we're talking about. To how many of you think you identified your fight? Oh, that's good, because it's a lot harder. That's pretty good. That's like a third. So did you think that the tool that you saw here was going to be of use to you?
I don't know.
Yeah. It is hard. Anybody else have an answer about their weakness in relation to the No, it's fine.
I'm still not clear.
Every speaker loves a question. Never apologize.
Uh-huh.
All of that you just said.
Oh.
All of that you just said. You just pointed out specifically what you're doing and why you're doing it. It's fun. I'm engaging my readers. You know, it's not explicative. It's not. You just ruled out all the things it's not without even noticing. Mm-hmm. It's my weird brain, right? Okay. Oh, I just... Sorry, audio people. Water on me. Okay. So living it is just literally, even in this room, just relying on one another to use the words might, changing your habits in general, like just allowing yourself to... take on these sort of awkward habits. We don't say, how might I write that chapter? We just don't. But you can. I do. Because, you know, years of practice. So it is hard to do alone, but unless you're consciously, deliberately doing it. And it's so great to have some support. So even in this room, if you supported one another with these kind of awkward concepts, it would help. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. And so changing that language that you're using with yourself and using that mind language can really change the way you see your work.
It really does.
It's literally,
on that note, like neurologically speaking, we have thoughts that we have all the time. I would call them either a painful thought or a stopping thought. And that thought, it happens so often in our brain that it gets what they call myelinized. It's sort of coded and protected. And it becomes, instead of like a little walking path, a highway. And so we use that. So obviously that's where we go all the time. I can remember a time after being trained in this thing where I was at my desk and I thought to myself, I am too fat to learn Twitter. You know? That was the thought in my head, and I believed that thought briefly. And I wouldn't have even noticed that thought had I not been trained in this way. But because the myelinized path in my brain was, I'm fat. That's the one that I go to all the time to beat myself up on, right? So here I am struggling with Twitter, and I just go to this stupid, you know, self-berating thing, and it makes sense to me because it's myelinized, you know, because it's a super highway of thinking. So the more you're able to then rethink other ways, those pathways get wider and broader because you're using them. So that's why now, after practice, I can use How Might, because I've rewritten those pathways. People really understand that your brain is not as, you know, a settled business as we all thought it was at the age of 5. You can definitely re-up what pathways your brain goes to. And, you know, yeah?
I've also heard that your subconscious hears the words but not necessarily in the context.
Right.
So, like, if you want to lose weight, you should say, I want to lose weight because your brain hears weight. You should say, I want to get fit because your brain hears mm-hmm. fit.
Yeah, there definitely is some positivity and some rewording of that sort. Where if you're phrasing a goal, you would put it in an outcome, not in an effort. Put it in outcome language, not in effort language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't have that much left to do except just do the thing. Like, there's a new vocabulary, there's a new set of habits, there's a new way of approaching your writing, perhaps, and find some support for that. So this my friend Deb Gallant, who's a writer and a podcaster. And she just like started noticing in the next few weeks that there was like fewer barriers, or like there was rules that she was putting up of her own making. So, you know, just because she started to understand things a little bit differently, she was like, oh, you know, I don't have to live by that. I can question that. I can push back on that. I can push back on fat. Maybe that's not accurate. Anyway. So it's a lot of information. I'll just go through a quick review because I want to save just a little bit more time for questions. So the 5 things. I procrastinate. I don't find time. That's something we say to blame ourselves instead of getting to the bottom of what it really is. Even the Hallmark movie. You're allowed to watch a Hallmark movie. There's nothing effing wrong with that. I don't know why I do what I do. You do need the language to get there. This is the language that's been accepted by the, you know, the scientific community. Clarify, ideate, develop, and implement. I'm really purposeful about not changing those, because if you wanted to research or go into the language, you would find these. You know, you'd find tools and things like that. Claim it. We all belong here. Didn't you love that cartoon, I'm Supposed to Be Here?
Yes.
How many of you think I might have had a moment of feeling like a fraud standing in front of you instead of being out there? You know? How many of you think it was like more like an hour and a half? Okay, tame it. And just this idea of no one else seems to have that problem. Such a bullshit proposition. And then live it. Just make sure you have the support, even if you have to explain these concepts to somebody that you live with or write with. So that's it for me. Any questions or comments?
Several things. First of all, I love all of your visual metaphors. And, I mean, you speak in a very visually metaphoric way. And
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful. And I also love what you're saying as far as the uplift. And I taught a women's workshop recently, and I asked the question I used as a prompt, who do you love? And I had 30 women in the class, and not one person in the class had themselves on the list. Not one.
Aww,
mm-hmm. Not one. And that's
But we're really trained to think that's selfish and self-absorbed.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So in the...
Even if we secretly love ourselves best.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I mean, I, you have made in this presentation, what I've heard is the visibility of the writer to self, to others, and that internal, external dimension. Can you just comment on that? I mean,
I can hardly follow that. It's something maybe I'm unaware of about myself. So,
I just sense an anchor in being visible to yourself, knowing yourself, especially hearing.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Oh, I follow you now. Yeah, to me, there's nothing more important than self-knowledge. It's one of the eight intelligences. You know, they have kinesthetic and, all those, they're Howard Gardner's eight intelligences. And one of them is self-knowledge, and I think it's really undervalued. And it's, especially among women, typically sort of excoriated, like you're selfish or self-absorbed. I've gotten that kind of information. I've gotten that kind of feedback most of my life because I like to be the center of attention. Because I'm a middle child. Give me a break. but it's an intelligence to self-knowledge, and it needs to be valued and needs to be fostered. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We have a question back here.
So, sorry.
No.
If one of my biggest problems is that, you know, I'm writing something and I'm like, oh, I think this could be really good. And then somewhere in the back of my head, I'm like, you know what? I'm just not good enough. What if my writing isn't good enough? And what if, you know, I can't get there because I'm not good enough? And then I come up with all the excuses. I'm procrastinating, or I have no time, or I'm just so stressed out. And like eliminating all of that, the stress, eliminating the, you know, the need for time. I've got time. I've got this. I've got that.
We all have 24 hours in a day.
We can all use them as we like. But then, you know, I've got that struggle that's just, you know, my writing isn't good enough to get there.
That question comes up from every client ever. And I just say, so quit writing. Is that an option?
Never.
Yeah. So if it's not an option, you need to get past that thought. So how would you get past that thought using just one of the tools we had today? I'm not good enough. What would you say might I'm giving away.
How might I write something that I love? And if I love it.
Very, that's a good turnaround. Or just how might I be good enough, too?
No, because that's one of the things. And she can text
me. I can use a friend.
Yes, she can use a friend.
Right, when she's stuck in that place, then you can reach out to somebody.
But just, there's nobody here who hasn't felt like I'm not good enough.
Oh, God.
And that's exactly that idea of you can't read the ingredients from the jar. Some of us aren't good enough. That's really true. But we can't know. So
Wait,
there
did
is
you just
no.
Say some of us aren't good enough?
Yeah, some of us aren't good enough. That's absolutely true. Are we all going to be published? And you know, I don't know. To me, that defangs it. Like, but you can't know. You can't know.
I think she wants a divorce.
But you know, oh, but. You can. I mean, you are doing what you love. It doesn't matter. That is good enough. You're doing what you love. You're putting your soul into it. You're self-developing. All of that is good enough. What other people think of what you're writing is what you can't control. That's the ingredients from inside the jar thing. You just can't know. I mean, my son wants to write raps. He writes raps, I should say. God, I'm not very supportive. My son writes raps, and they're great. And, you know, he wants to put out an EP and, you know, succeed in the music business. I find with all of my training, I find it hard to support that. Because who knows if he's good enough. But I do believe that no one knows. So you just go out full court press. Because he could be. You could be. I could be. My next book could be, you know, a great big movie. Oh, my gosh.
We have time for one more question.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you're speaking to us as writers, but am I correct that this whole template, or I'm not sure what word to use, I'm just a writer, could apply to other areas of life as well?
It is absolutely primarily used in business. That's why I graduated, you know, like I said, and everybody took it into product development and business solutions. It is absolutely mostly used in that way. Obviously, government uses as well. There are people who get trained in it to change the culture so that they all are talking in this language and the creativity rises. I just personally felt like if there was a voice I wanted to amplify, it would be writers' voices and not brand managers' voices. So even though that was my background brainstorming, I was just ready to bring the difference I cared about out. So. Yeah, that template will work. That's what I mean, because it's just an observed process. It'll work every time you're creating in any setting.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. Please help me thank Julia for her time today.
Thank you, everybody.
And we have a gift for Julia. It is a Liza Donnelly cartoon
that
she has signed for you. So thank you very much for your
Isn't that amazing?
Workshop.
Wow, I should have done a good job if I'd known.